The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright. The power to create a happier, healthier life drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected, a place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California, and I am feeling so overwhelmed with love from all of the listeners, not just for my show, but all of the shows on the network. The number of emails that I have received shows so much appreciation for the inspiration they're getting and how many lives it's changing. Well, I gotta tell you, it's just so humbling. I called my dearest friend, Constance Arnold, who has been on the network with me for the longest, and I just said, look at these. Look what is happening. Love is flowing to us at every angle. And we just sat there in awe. It brings back memories of my first show almost 8 years ago when my heart got stuck in my throat because I was so scared to speak. And then I remember the times when the network was evolving so fast and it was so much work and I didn't know what I was doing. And I got frustrated. Yes, there were times that I wanted to throw in the towel. Fortunately, I kept putting one foot in front of the other and I got my emotions out of the picture and finally let go and let the universe take over. And, well, the rest is history. This week I went to the Palm Springs Convention Center to look at this beautiful place to host our huge Law of Attraction event on land on April 11th, 12th, and 13th, 2014. I was surprised that the event planner came out and told me that many people at the Palm Springs Convention Center were listeners of the network. And I looked at him and I was so amazed and so thrilled at the same time. I just want to state that the Law of Attraction Network is a Law of Attraction story of the first degree. I started this at the age of 53, not knowing what I was doing. All I knew is that I needed to get the answers, and the only way I could do that was to actually interview the Law of Attraction experts. And it turned out that all of those questions that were so important for me to hear was exactly what the listeners wanted to hear as well. So I grew, I expanded, and finally, I just surrendered. I am seeing it through different eyes now, and I can look back and say that every difficult step was indeed necessary for me to succeed. That source was directing me to do something totally different and out of my comfort range. Well, anyway, I just want to say thank you to all my wonderful listeners and the listeners of Law of Attraction Radio Network. Thank you. It's because of each of you that we have grown together, and I promise we are going to stick with this because, as my good friend Constance says, the best is yet to be. You know, I think Neil Donald Walsh summed it up perfectly. He stated, no matter what you're looking at, you can find something wrong with it, something imperfect, something that's just not okay. There is also something right with everything. No matter what you're looking at, you can find something right with it, something perfect. There remains then only one question. What are you going to look at? What are you choosing to notice? That is so true. Well, with today's show focusing on what is going wrong in Washington, D.C., I'd like to maybe talk about something that is going right in the United States of America. The success story of North Dakota, where the unemployment rate is 3.3, while the rest of the nation is averaging in the nines. North Dakota is the only state to be in continuous budget surplus since the banking crisis of 2008. Its balance sheet is so strong that it recently reduced individual income taxes and property taxes by a combined $400 million, and they are debating further cuts to its citizens. It also has the lowest foreclosure rate and the lowest credit card default rate in the country, and it has no bank failures, at least in the last decade. So what's so unique about the state? North Dakota has one thing that no other state can claim. It has its own state-owned bank. The Bank of North Dakota, BND, does not compete with the local banks, but partners with them, helping them with capital and liquidity requirement. It participates in loans, provides guarantees, and acts as sort of a mini Fed for the state. What's even more amazing is that the state bank does not have FDIC insurance, which means they are free and clear of the manipulation of the Federal Reserve. Their collection of taxes stay in the state where they can produce fast results and growth for its citizens. There's so much more to this story, but if you compare this success story of low unemployment rate, less taxes, and better quality of life to that of, say, California, which happens to be the largest state in the union that does not have a state bank, well, you can see the dramatic difference in social and economic issues. I think the success story of North Dakota needs to be brought out in the public light, and that we need to be focusing how we can get our state to be more economically stable and thriving, as opposed to focusing on the corruption that is apparent in Washington, D.C. We need to shift back to what the Constitution was all about, giving state rights the priority instead of the federal government. That's how we'll thrive. And Neil Donald Walsh is absolutely correct. We can see everything that is wrong in Washington, D.C., and we can now see what's going right in the wonderful state of North Dakota. This is how we need to be focusing on the success and bringing it into our own individual states. And if you really think about it, with all of the expats moving out of the U.S. right now, it's easier to move to a state that has its own bank rather than to leave the country and give up your citizenship. Well, tonight we have Marianne Williamson with us, who is a best-selling author of the incredible, mind-blowing books called The Course in Miracles. Marianne is a worldwide spiritual leader and has written a book on how to heal the soul of America. I am thrilled to bring Marianne on because she has just announced that she is running for U.S. Congress out of District 33 in Los Angeles, California. So I wanted to get her perspective on certain issues that I know that are on the minds of many. And with this interview, she definitely delivers. You may or may not agree with Marianne, but I think you will all realize that there is a huge need for change in our political system. So let's take a short break here, and when we return, we're going to dive right in with Marianne Williamson. We'll be right back.
I'm Sue Elliott, editor-in-chief of Law of Attraction magazine. The winter edition of the magazine is now on newsstands. It's filled with tools you can use to attract epic love, release stress, install the millionaire mindset, and manifest all your desires. Law of Attraction magazine is also available in digital form at lawofattractionmag.com. Purchase your copy today. That's lawofattractionmag.com.
Law of Attraction magazine is not associated with Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Need help realizing your dreams?
As a hypnotherapist specializing in the law of attraction, Jules Johnson can help you to break through your critical mind into your manifested dream. Get started today by going to lawofattractiontools.com. Set up a personal Skype video or phone session. Law of Attraction Tools is there to help you turn your desires into reality. That's lawofattractiontools.com.
This is G.P. Walsh, meditation expert and host of Law of Attraction 2.0, right here on the Law of Attraction Radio Network. I've tried numerous brainwave technology products, and none of them worked on me. That is, until I tried the Soundscape Meditations from Codimensions.com. The effect was immediate, and my meditation deepened. Get the Soundscape Meditations from Codimensions.com and put them on your iPod. Believe me, if they work on me, they'll work on anyone.
Real fast, I want to mention a place where you can help the Philippine survivors get back on their feet. I'm sure you all saw the devastation and are wondering what you can do to help. Well, I have the perfect place for you to reach out and touch someone. A few months ago, I had humanitarian Linda Cruz come on my show to talk about her book, Marmalade and Machine Guns, which was about her experiences going into the devastated areas of the tsunami in Thailand and the earthquake devastation in Pakistan. She would literally go alone and where no man would go before to fulfill her purpose, which is to help the survivors create new homes, new schools, new businesses in order to fully recover. She is such an incredible miracle worker that they are now making a movie about her. But even a movie production won't stop her from being a humanitarian. She is off to the Philippines and she is asked for your help and a donation. Remember, what you give to help someone will return to you tenfold. So give and then give again. Go to Linda Cruz's Facebook page where you can donate through the World Business NationBuilder.com, Be the Change Philippine Relief Donation. Linda will help the recovery efforts for not just the material items and the businesses, but for the hearts and the emotional well-being of all those lives who are changed in an instant. So go there and help Linda today. Now let's get on to hearing from the wonderful Marianne Williamson. Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate that.
And congratulations on your decision to run for the U.S. Congress.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your excitement about it. I think it's a pretty cool thing myself. I appreciate that.
Good. But the question is, why are you running?
I think that we are living in a time when America needs a new conversation. I think the world needs a new conversation. And I think that conversation is happening pretty much in every corner of our society except politics. Politics is run by a status quo that is dominated by very calcified thought forms that have little to do with who we are really in our hearts. That old calcified context sees us as economic creatures only. And I think it's a paradigm, it's a conversation that is spent. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're seeing a more enlightened perspective everywhere except politics. I think that many of us have thought politics was so toxic and so fear-based and so conflict-based that we didn't want anything to do with it. But we've seen over the last few years the price we pay when more conscious people sit out the political process. How can we complain that politics is so devoid of higher consciousness when we ourselves have not put it there?
Oh, well said.
So I are ready to lead a charge. We need a more transformational politics. We need a politics which does address causal elements as well as just simply the effect. You can't just wait till violence erupts and just build more prisons and drop more bombs. You have to deal with the violence in people's hearts that starts way back when children are neglected and not given what they need. It's reasonable to assume that desperate people will do desperate things. So So if once you understand that, you recognize that large groups of desperate people are a security risk, both domestically and internationally, and you address that. You realize that taking care of children under the age of eight is not just something you're doing for them, but that you're doing for the whole society. So people who know how to change one heart have a lot of clues as to what will help change the world. And I think that it's time for us to start speaking up within a political context as well as everywhere else.
Wow, that's great. I love that. Now I'll rephrase that. You were a Democrat, but decided to change parties and run as an independent.
Well, I've been a Democrat all my life. I'm not ready to say I'm not a Democrat. It's just that whole Democrat versus Republican thing has reached the limit of its ultimate effectiveness. We've gotten to the point where Democrats only talk to Democrats and Republicans only talk to Republicans, and that actually sucks the oxygen out of our public discourse. We need to be able to talk to each other, understanding that, as Thomas Jefferson said, not every difference of opinion is a difference of principle. Eisenhower said that the American mind at its best is both liberal and conservative. So we need to be able to have a conversation that is not filtered through either major political party dogma. And that's why I think a new kind of independent candidacy. So I wouldn't say I'm not a Democrat. I mean, if I win, I would caucus with the Democrats, but I'm an American before I'm a Democrat.
Absolutely.
And I think that there are many people who are Americans before they're Republican. And so I want to lead with my Americanism, and I want to lead within a context. I want to lead with a part of me that isn't like prejudging you because you're not in my political party. Mm-hmm. I'm going to lead from a context of I'm an American, you're an American. Let's have a conversation about where to go from here.
So you say that you would caucus with the Democrats, but I'm just wondering what that means. I'm an independent, and always have been. And I feel that because I'm an independent, but I'm also kind of a conservative, I've been labeled certain terms.
But that's my point. That's exactly my point.
Exactly.
You're seen as a conservative. Therefore, we've lost that sense of what Eisenhower said, which is that the American mind at its best is both conservative and liberal. So that's why. You end up feeling labeled, and so limits the conversation.
Absolutely. So when you caucus with the Democrats, what does that mean exactly?
Well, once you go to Congress, you have to have, there are certain meetings. They're called caucuses. And you have to meet with someone.
I see.
So the Democratic policy positions are more closely aligned with, like let's say there was a vote being taken. When that's looked at, my general perspective is more aligned with the Democrats than the Republicans. But then, as you were saying, I don't want to be labeled in terms of my larger voice in the culture. I don't want to be labeled because, I think we all are at a point of wanting to throw off those filters.
Absolutely.
Except the parties themselves.
Mm-hmm. So what I just wanted to get your feedback about what you think is, well, let me go back. I am a conservative. I think people need to take responsibility for their own needs. That's the only way that they can empower their creation powers.
Mm-hmm.
Is this right? I mean, I'm all for helping the children, oh, goodness, more than anything. But where does it come where a person, at what age, or where do we let them take responsibility for them to create the life that they want?
I think you named it. It's called childhood. Let's take an example. A position which is not conservative and which the conservatives resist at this point, is the idea, in Congress anyway, is the idea of universal preschool. But let's talk for a moment about what that means. An American who can afford it tends to send their children to preschool.
Right.
An American who cannot afford it tends not to send their children to preschool.
Right.
The child who does not go to preschool goes into kindergarten behind on day one because the children who went to preschool have already started to read.
Mm-hmm.
We have 2 years to catch that child up on their reading. And if we do not make it by the second grade, then that child is then on a 50% probability track to incarceration.
Mm.
And if we do not catch that child up within 2 years after that, by the fourth grade, there is a direct correlation between how many American children cannot read in the fourth grade and how many prison beds will be built. So when you know when a child, you know, you and I certainly agree Americans should, you know, work hard and make their own way up the ladder. But I know that when I was so tiny that I could not have gotten up to the first rung of the ladder by myself, that society was serving itself as well as me, giving me the public education and so forth, that it just put me on the first rung. So I think when you said, what's the line, it's exactly what you said. It's called childhood.
I believe that. I think that the childhood, I mean, the preschools are so necessary, and I have seen the difference in my grandkids, the ones who have it and the ones who didn't have it.
That's exactly the point.
It's amazing.
That's exactly the point.
And if we could do that, then we could actually shift the way everybody thinks. I mean, this whole country would be changed.
But see, that's an example, Jules, of what you just said. You, by saying what you just said, that is not a position that most conservatives would support.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because that is government spending. And I say government spending for children, yeah. You know, I saw this, I was at this charity fundraiser last night for literacy, this amazing program called Get Lit, that's these kids from disadvantaged high schools who are taught this amazing program of poetry, where they come together in little groups and they're given a choice of 100 classic poems. And they read these poems in this kind of dramatic style, and then they write one together. It's just amazing. And these kids are literally, like two of the kids were saying, this program saved my life.
Wow.
Well, you know, these are two African-American young kids, and you know what? They know. They know that for an African-American male today, an African-American male has a 1 in 3 lifetime probability of incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we shouldn't even be thinking liberal conservative. We should
be
thinking unnecessary human suffering that is an assault on democracy itself. You know, we have a kind of shutout where a government of the people, by the people, for the people has become a government of a few of the people, by a few of the people, and for a few of the people. That's not democracy.
That's right. Wow.
That's
so true. Now, the mainstream media is blasting anyone who has spiritual beliefs, and they're going to be tough. How's that going to affect you?
Well, you certainly, you know, you have a way of getting right to the point. You're absolutely correct. You know, the New York Times article that came out about me last week said that I'm a New Age guru running for Congress. And, of course, that calling someone New Age is a way to label them so as to appear like you're a lightweight thinker, you're fuzzy-brained, you're just all crystals and rainbows, and you don't deal with serious subjects. That is, I think, probably the way the strategy that is already being taken by the certain mainstream media, more East Coast than West Coast, and probably the people who will be running against me. I feel that when people actually hear me speak, that those fears are allayed very quickly. But the issue is sometimes how difficult it can be to get your word out when, you know, the media is doing what it's doing. That's why I hope people who do support my campaign will go to MarianneForCongress.com. And if people even give me $5, you know, this is a grassroots campaign where I'm just hoping that enough people around the country will send me even $5 that I could raise the money to be competitive.
Oh, yes. Okay, everybody. Send
$5.
Send $5.
I gave $5. It's called my I gave $5 campaign.
Let's talk about some of the serious issues. Let's talk about Syria.
Well, Syria is a very tough issue, of course. Well, you know, there are some, you know, if you look at the allopathic model of medicine, we've transitioned into an integrative approach to medicine because we know that you can't just wait for things to get terrible and then try to eradicate or suppress the symptom. That sometimes invasive measures, like certain kinds of cancers, like certain kinds of melanoma, you operate and you actually do more to spread the cancer. There's a lot of treatment with cancer where you have to be careful that too much radiation could kill the patient, all that kind of thing. And that's true in society as well. Look at Iraq. That invasive measure just spread cancer. Iraq, Al-Qaeda wasn't in there before. You know, you can say what you want about Saddam Hussein, but he was our buffer with Iran, and he hated Al-Qaeda. So that invasive surgery actually spread more cancer. Syria is an example of that. There was a real danger in invasive surgery, and that's why invasive surgery was not taken. Who knows what's going to happen now? I don't know the specific answer. I don't think anybody, it's kind of like in medicine. Sometimes in medicine, the doctor has to say, our best chances here are boosting the immune system. And I think that that's the case in Syria as well.
So we might have to bomb?
Well, I don't think bombing Syria at this point is on the table, but I would not have supported that.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. What about, let's go to Obamacare.
Obamacare, I believe there should be universal health care. I believe that there should be universal health care in the United States, just like there is in some countries in Europe. People jump up and down and say, oh, socialism. Well, what do you think the police department is? What do you think the fire department is? It's some things where the society feels that society uses its resources. Once again, if you're a government of the people, by the people, for the people, then this is not considered anything outrageous. So I believe there should be universal health care. Now, what this was, Obamacare, and, you know, I celebrate the fact that pre-existing conditions, that is no longer going to keep people from being able to have health care, and I celebrate the fact that the younger people who can stay on their parents' policies till they're 26, I celebrate the fact that millions of people will have insurance who would not have. However, I believe strongly that what there should have been from the beginning is just a universal health care. And I think that what we have in Obamacare is exactly what I most feel strongly against, and that is that huge multinational corporate interests have become like a new aristocracy in the United States. They take what they want, and then whatever crumbs are left are given to the rest of the people. So after the health insurance companies said what they would allow, after the pharmaceutical companies said what they would allow, because both Obama and John McCain had received so many millions of dollars from health insurance companies, then we got Obamacare. And so it's almost neither here nor there.
And so what you're saying is the Obamacare put a middleman in between it all? That's getting
no,
rid of the
no,
money?
That's not what I'm saying at all, because believe me, your health insurance companies are your middleman. So the idea that there was no middleman before and this puts a middleman is pretty ridiculous. There was plenty of a middleman. It was called your health insurance company. So that's complete propaganda to say that Obamacare put a middleman. Your health if you have health insurance, you have a middleman. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So socialized medicine would mean, as they do in Europe, means that nobody pays for it. Everybody is covered, and they don't pay for it. It's just paid out of the taxes.
You can still go to your private insurer.
Oh.
I mean, you can still go to your private doctor if you want to in Europe. But I'll give you an example. I know a woman who comes from Italy. And she had to have an operation, and she's lived here for many years. But she went back to Italy for her operation because the same operation that cost, let's say, $100, a procedure that would cost $600 here would cost $100 in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And so this idea that, you know, we're not paying, you are paying. When you do not have people with health insurance and people are using the emergency rooms for just common things, you are still paying for it. We're still paying for that. So the system as it is now doesn't mean you're not paying for other people. You are paying for other people. You know, there's a lot of talk, you know, about some people would say, well, I don't like the entitled attitude that poor people have where they just feel that the government should give them something for nothing. You know, the way, if you actually look at the numbers, first of all, you and I, I'm sure, would agree that anybody having an entitled attitude is darkness. Anybody having an entitled attitude where they feel that anybody has done anything is not healthy. But if you actually look at the money in the United States, it's not poor people with entitled attitudes that are forming a huge suck on the American economy. The huge suck on the American economy is because of groups of people who are very, very rich who have entitled attitudes. I understand that we shouldn't indulge a poor person with an entitled attitude, but why do we indulge rich people with entitled attitudes? I understand that a poor person shouldn't just sit there and think the government owes them something, but why should we think that it's okay for a rich person with an entitled attitude to feel the government just owes them something? You know, Martin Luther King used to say, if they give it to the poor, they call it a handout, and if they give it to the rich, they call it a subsidy. I mean, we're sitting here complaining. Somebody will say, well, we don't want to give $1 million to poor children for food stamps, but they'll give $100 million to the oil companies that are already for subsidies when they're already making billions of dollars in profit.
I agree. What's up with Congress? Why?
Well, what's up with Congress is that both because we have money with such undue influence on our political functioning now, especially since the Citizens United decision, both parties are so beholden to that corporate money in order to get elected and stay elected. Poor children, or children at all, you don't have to be a poor child, no child, they don't work yet, so they don't have financial leverage. So if you're living in a society, which we've now become, where financial leverage determines political influence, then you're completely messing with the fundamentals of democracy because money has more power
right.
than people do. That's not democracy.
It's not compassion either.
And that's why, no, exactly, and that's why I think that getting the money out of politics is the most important thing. It's the underlying, it's the cancer that underlies all the other cancers. It's that forces, whether it's individuals or unions or corporations, no matter what, people with huge amounts of money and huge lobbyists in Congress are able to determine policy decisions much more than the people of the United States.
That's right. Now, what about the Federal Reserve?
Well, you know, I think it's very healthy that there even is a conversation about the Federal Reserve. When you and I were growing up, people didn't even talk about it.
Yeah,
I think it should be audited at the very least.
Good.
I think it's very interesting and a very healthy thing that people are even asking, why are private bankers determining the economic policy of the United States? Why do we have to buy our money back? So I'm not one of those, oh, abolish the Fed. Necessarily, because if you abolish them, then you give it back to the government, and I'm not sure we should trust that anymore. So, you know, any more than private bankers. So, especially since they're all in cahoots the way they are. So I think beginning with just transparency and auditing them. I mean, the idea that it's almost like operate like a secret cabal.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that people are asking about the Federal Reserve is very healthy. I think that's a really good thing that people are saying, in so many areas, what is going on in this country? So to me, that's good for democracy, that people are saying, whether they're coming from the left or the right, what is going on here?
Okay, so we find out what is going on with the Federal Reserve, and they're
mm-hmm.
making policy and everything. What if something is wrong? Do we really have any power to change it?
Well, our power to change it is to elect two things. First of all, our power to change it is the power to elect enough people to Congress who would have the consciousness who would want to change it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in order for more people who would have the consciousness who would want to change it, those people usually are not people who are receiving major financial support from those very forces. That's why we've got to get the money out of politics. Because right now, do you know how much money it costs to run for office?
Millions.
Millions, millions. Millions and millions and millions. Now, I have a national audience, and I'm hoping that I will receive support from people all over the country who will each send me $5, and that could give me the opportunity to do this. But it's a lockout. I mean, the average person couldn't even think about it, particularly if they were not running as a Democrat or a Republican.
That's right.
So that's why we've got to, number one, get the money out of politics, and number two, get the people in there who would support these kinds of different decisions. But that's not going to happen with the current system. It's going to happen because enough people are supporting candidates, hopefully, like my own campaign, in which these questions will be addressed.
What about the mainstream media, though? If more people had the opportunity to go in and have an unbiased media, then there would be more information flowing. But it seems like it's only one particular way.
Well, in 1996, there was something really bad that happened, and that was called the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And that is what enabled, you know, when you and I were growing up, the same company could not own the television station in town and the radio station in town and the newspaper in town for that very reason.
Wow.
Because it was understood that that would make for too much of consolidation of viewpoint. And that was changed in 1996. So what we have now is what you just said. A few corporations own so much of the media, and of course they argue their perspective, so that reporters who used to get Pulitzer Prizes for muckraking and exposing things are often now fired for those same articles. Because when you and I were growing up, there was a firewall between editorial and advertising. They weren't even on the same floor of the newspaper. They weren't even supposed to talk to each other. Now it's all entwined. And this is the kind of thing that if we want our democracy back, we need to address. And once again, it's why I'm running as an independent, because I don't think that that kind of conversation is going to be had by either the Democrats or the Republicans,
right,
who are both so beholden to those same corporate forces in order to get elected and stay elected. It's really a crisis of democracy.
Oh, it really is. So when you get to Congress, are you going to be able to put things in motion so that we can get our media back?
Well, if I have the honor of winning my election, I will be just one congresswoman out of 435 people in Congress, and I will be a first-term congresswoman. So it's not like I'm going to go to Washington and have a magic wand. However, I will be able to contribute to the conversations already happening there among others who, believe it or not, feel the way we feel, many on the left and many on the right. And I feel that I can, particularly if I win, being an independent, I think that this campaign will open the space for more people having these conversations to run and have the confidence that they could win. Mm. So all that any one individual can do is what that one individual can do, but I would certainly use whatever power I was given to do exactly what you said.
What about I don't think I have the name right, it's called Transatlantic?
Trans-Pacific Partnership.
What is that?
Trans-Pacific, it's absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible. It is basically a multinational corporate coup. What it is, it's like NAFTA on steroids. What it is an agreement, a trade agreement. Be real careful when you hear these words, trade agreement, because these trade agreements are where several countries come together and they make these rules. And then if you are a signatory onto the trade agreement, that means that any law, sovereignty, any law that the people of that country wanted to make that did not agree in principle with the trade partnership, we could not make that law. So basically, it's a sacrifice of sovereignty. For instance, a lot of times people are talking these days about the food and GMOs.
Right.
Let's say the trade partnership included support for Monsanto and other chemical companies in the manufacture of GMOs. Well, if we wanted to pass a labeling law, let's say, and Monsanto felt that that hurt them, they could actually sue the U.S. government for the money they think they would have made had we not passed that law. So it is a horrible, horrible sacrifice of sovereignty. And, you know, it's interesting that you ask about that, because the biggest issues now are not being asked from the left or the right. They're being asked from the left and the right. And Trans-Pacific Partnership, because it's not really a crisis. It's all a red herring, this left versus right thing.
Yeah.
It really has to do with whether we order our civilization according to economic principles or humanitarian principles. That's what this is really about. And that's why it has to be a new conversation. And the new conversation is emerging. So, and I'm so happy to hear, even on an interview like this, that you're even asking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Because it's just beginning to bubble up that people are going, what the hell is happening with that? And I'm glad people are asking that.
So I want to ask you another question. Now, we've seen wonderful people get elected, and then they get to Washington. And they kind of disappear in all of the gunk. What assurances do we have other than knowing what a woman you are with all of your fabulous books? We know your beliefs, but how do we know that it's going to work? Is the system so far down that anybody who goes there simply will be discounted?
I can't tell you till I'm there. I mean, I'll tell you. I'll say, oh, my God, it's so awful. I mean, there's no – are you still
yeah.
there?
Can no, I no, I'm
yeah.
still here.
I mean, I think that the forces of resistance, which we in the spiritual world would call the ego, they're active in our lives whether we work in politics or not. They're active in our individual lives and in our collective. You know, you see that kind of politics in nonprofits. You see that kind of politics at work. You see that kind of politics in families. And you can't transform a system without engaging it. So I think there's, you know, the Course in Miracles says you can't bring the darkness, you can't bring the light to the darkness. You have to bring the darkness to the light.
Right.
James Baldwin, the author, said, not everything that is faced can be changed, but until things are faced, they cannot be changed. So maybe I'm going to find, if I get elected, exactly what you said. But even that is part of the detox, isn't it?
Oh, wow. Good point. So if, by chance, because I'm really, really wanting you to win.
Oh, thank you.
But if for some reason you don't, at least you have opened up the conversation a little bit more for the awakening to occur.
If I win, it will be a lot better.
Yes, I was thinking.
Because if I don't win, you know, you were talking before about casting aspersions on new spirituality and stuff. So in a way, you know, one of the reasons I hope people will support my campaign is because if I don't win, there will be that much more ammunition that, oh, well, you know, well, we know what happened when they did a quote-unquote New Age campaign. Do you know what I'm saying? Whereas if we can stand on the possibility of possibility here, and I will, listen, if everybody who is listening to this who agrees with the things we're talking about goes to MarianneForCongress.com and does what their heart leads them to do in terms of supporting this campaign, I will win. My winning is simply a decision we make or not. And if we do make that decision and there is one campaign like this, then I just feel it will really help create a field of possibility for so many people to do this. And what you were saying before is so true. Some will be conservative. Some will be the liberals. There will be people having a conversation where that of itself is not a filter that then limits the conversation, because it should be this synergistic thing. Accountability is important. Taking care of children is important. It shouldn't be either or.
Right. It should be open. It should be talked about. It should be going mm-hmm. forward. Mm-hmm. I love it. Is there a message for those people who want to jump in but are scared? Just like you said, you are bringing the darkness into the light. And if you win, they may be able to jump in.
A citizen, when the founders wrote the Constitution, they intended the power of the United States to rest in the hands of the people of the United States. And two things have happened. One is that there has been this lockout created by money and by political power. But I think that we, the people, have conspired with the lockout by not voting, by being distracted, by not thinking about the issues. If we want our democracy, we have to claim it. Every generation is a steward of this democracy. And you can't break one link of a chain and retain the chain. So I think a lot of people are realizing we were disconnected, we were dissociated, we were not looking. And what has happened could have been predicted given the fact that so many people have just kind of zoned out. We understand now that we have to interrupt the pattern of the status quo. And love, when you say, what about the fear? Love replaces fear. Love of our country. Love of the freedoms that we have. Gratitude for the extraordinary blessing of living in this country, which, although it has made some serious mistakes, and I believe is making serious mistakes right now, has been a blessing on all of us. It has been a blessing on our parents, and it's our responsibility to make sure it will be a blessing on our children and our children's children. When America gets things right, we are a blessing on the world. And when we get things wrong, we are a blot on the world. Which we are is not a decision that is meant to be decided in Washington. It is meant to be decided inside our minds and our hearts. And the only, you know, cynicism and despair and anger and disconnection is not the answer. A new kind of commitment based on love for the possibilities of what could be and a serious intention to correct, to course correct, where America has swerved from our ethical center. That is the consciousness, I believe, that will form this new possibility for transformational politics. And I know with my campaign, I dedicate my campaign to that effort, which is much bigger than any one person's campaign.
Yeah.
But if enough of us start that conversation, have that conversation, support the campaigns that are based on that conversation, then we will have something extraordinary happen in this country. Extraordinary things have happened here before, and it's time for our next miracle.
I will say that what we saw with Syria and everybody flooding the emails and the phones of the U.S. Congress, we did make a difference because we stood together and said no. We can do that for you, Marianne. We can do that for you. We can, each one of us can go and give Marianne the $5 that we all can afford. We can give it to her so that we can get her into Congress and actually open the door for others to go in after.
As my mother would say, from your mouth to God's ears. Thank you so much for saying that, because that's how I see it too, and I so appreciate your belief that it's possible, which it is, and your belief that it would be a wise and beautiful thing to do. Thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you. And I want to thank you for coming on today and sharing all of this with us, because now we know what to do. And I'm so excited. Now, is it the November election?
Well, the primary is June 3rd.
Oh, June 3rd.
So the first thing is the primary on June 3rd.
Okay. And that's for District 33 in California,
mm-hmm.
which is
mm-hmm.
Woodland Hills.
Well, it's not Woodland Hills. It's up Malibu all the way down through Rancho Palos Verdes. Where are you?
I'm in by Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is Agoura Hills, Bel Air, Beverly Hills, Brentwood, Calabasas, El Segundo, Hermosa Beach, Manhattan Beach, Marina Del Rey, Pacific Palisades, Malibu, part of San Pedro, Santa Monica, Redondo Beach, Rolling Hills Estates, Rolling Hills, Topanga, part of Torrance, Venice, Vista Del Mar, part of West Hollywood, no, I'm sorry, part of West Los Angeles, and part of Westwood.
Wow, and fortunate for us, California is the new age group, and I'm thrilled. I am thrilled.
Exactly. When some people have said you can't say this or you can't say that, I said, sure, I sure can. This is California District 33.
Yay!
We believe in that stuff here.
Yes, we do, and that's because we're open-minded, and I really love Californians for that. Marianne,
I am so with
thank
you.
You so much.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it, and I wish you the best, and thank you so much for this opportunity.
So for all of you who wish to donate to Marianne Williamson, please go to MarianneWilliamson.com, make a donation there of $5. And what you will be doing is not only helping Marianne, but you're going to be helping others to come and start participating. You know, if we want to change really what's going on in Washington, D.C., we have to get the right people there. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is to give them $5. It's a great idea. We can actually change and shift what is now going wrong into what is going right. And again, it comes back to what Neil Donald Walsh says. We can see anything. If we look at it long enough, we can see what's wrong with us. And if we look at something long enough, we'll be able to see what is perfect about that. Well, what is perfect about Washington, D.C. right now is the fact that we all know that it needs to change. That's great. We're all in agreement. So we need to work together to make this a reality. And we can do it because, you know what? We're pretty powerful. We are powerful beings. We can just imprint that energy field around us to say that we want a thriving life like in North Dakota, in our neck of the woods. We can do that as long as we recognize that it's a possibility. Now, those people in North Dakota created a wonderful scenario. There's nothing stopping us from doing the same thing, but we have to do it together, and we will. I believe that a whole brand new way of living and thriving is on its way to us. It's only a matter of a short time if we can come together. This has been a really, really fun show for me. I get to spout out about the politics. I still believe the more that everybody knows about is really something that's going to benefit all of us, benefit our children, benefit their children. So thank you for being with me today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for donating to the Philippines through Linda Cruz. Thank you for sending Marianne $5. And thank you for keeping an open mind. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Have a wonderful week, and I'll be back next week with another great show of Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another great show from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send an email to Jules@LOARadionetwork.com and have a great week.